The House Committee on Revenue will reconvene. It being 2 o'clock, we're on our 2 o'clock agenda. Let me just note for the public that we are opening a public hearing on House Bill 2157. There is a sign-up sheet for the public hearing on the table. Those who would like to be heard today should sign up. We're going to spend a few minutes talking about the bill in general. There will be a couple of amendments that will be distributed at the appropriate moment, and then we'll take public testimony. Chris.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, good afternoon. In your packet for House Bill 2157, you have a draft SMS and a draft revenue impact, those regular documents. You also have three other documents that are for informational purposes. There's one that's entitled HB 2157. There's a table on top, and I'll get to that in a little bit, but that's meant to be a summary description of what's contained in the bill. And then you also have two flowcharts, and there I was going to go over a little bit about exactly what taxable income is and where how it's calculated, both on the corporate side and on the individual side. But the bill itself is kind of the regular reconnect bill. Pertaining to various definitions in federal law to which we tie. And generally, these are broken down into two categories. We have the definition of taxable income and then all other kinds of definitions. And we currently have what we call a rolling reconnect to the definition of taxable income. And what that means is that any federal changes at any law changes at the federal level that affect taxable income automatically flow through to Oregon. If whether they increase or decrease taxable income, those changes will flow through to Oregon, and then Oregon will experience an income increase or decrease depending on the change. For all other definitions in federal law, we have to tie to a specific date. As per our Constitution, you're not allowed to cede power to the federal government by tying to some future date, with the exception of taxable income. So that's kind of the backdrop of what's involved here. If I could refer you to the page that's entitled HB 2157, it has a table on the top there. There are, broadly speaking, there are three categories of laws that are contained in the bill. The one of most interest here is the definitions relating to corporate and personal tax provisions. There also is a section on unemployment insurance, and that's at the back of the bill and the front of the bill. The first 10 sections will appear new to those of you who have seen this kind of bill before in prior sessions. And that language pertains to PERS pension plans. They are updating their tie date from August of 2003 to now. That's been added to this bill. There's no revenue impact fees to that. That pertains to their tax qualification status with the federal government. So that's kind of a new piece, historically speaking. But by way of the definitions that are contained in the bill, this table is meant to try and summarize exactly the policies that are contained in here. So as I just mentioned, that PERS pensions, those are the first 10 sections of the bill. There are taxpayer representation pieces in here, and those pertain to definitions at the federal level. There are various ties to charities, and that 7 sections pertain to those. Those would be definitions of 501c3s. Basically, we have to tie to a specific date, so if the feds change the definition of a 501c3, that's one of the things we would need to update to. Income definition, there are 2 of those in here. One pertains to the Elderly Rental Assistance Program, and one to the Senior Deferral Program. Within those programs, to qualify, individuals have to be of a certain AGI level, generally a lower income level, and program reference there is to AGI, so this ties to that definition. And then a general reference, there are 5 sections, and within these sections, it's kind of an anywhere else, it's not specifically identified, there's a date there. And within the bill, there's a date piece to that as well as reference to the tax year of the taxpayer, and that's kind of the rolling reconnect piece of what's currently in the bill. So that's kind of a brief backdrop of the policies contained in the bill. It's generally a straightforward bill in terms of just updating it. I do want to point out in Section 28 of the bill, there is a list of federal provisions that were passed in 2008. That's just a kind of a laundry list of federal laws that were enacted in 2008 to provide some information on the policies that we're connecting to. So if I could turn you to the flow charts that you have. This is just, again, background information. I believe you saw the, well, there was some information during the personal income tax overview I went through. That chart is labeled federal taxable income. I reworked that a little bit. And then the other sheet is called a business income statement. That's the corporate federal taxable income calculation. I just didn't want to have two charts with the same title. So the easier one of the two is probably the one for the personal side, and that's the federal taxable income. And this is essentially the Form 1040, where gross income that gets reported on the return are the usual suspects. You have wages, business income, capital gains, losses, those kinds of things. And then summing those up, you get to your what's called the gross total. And then subtracted from that are above-the-line deductions or adjustments. And examples of those are moving expenses, student loan interest deduction, some educator expenses, some contributions to regular IRAs, those kinds of things. Those are deductions that everyone is allowed to take, whether they itemize their deductions or take the standard deduction. And so that gross income minus those adjustments is the adjusted gross income, which is everybody's pretty familiar with. And then moving on down the federal form, so to speak, then you subtract your personal exemption deductions. And again, I'm talking about federal law here. And at the federal level, the personal exemption deduction is around $3,500 or $3,600, and that's a kind of a per-person, per-family deduction. And then the standard or itemized deductions are claimed to arrive at federal taxable income. So conceptually, that's the piece that we're tying to on the Oregon in Oregon law. So any change in federal law that affects one of those items would automatically flow through to Oregon under current law, whether it be removing, changing the tax base, making some income not taxable, or reducing some of the adjustments. Conceptually where we stand there. On the corporate side, if you flip over to the business income statement, In a very general way, the starting point would be gross receipts of the corporation, whatever sales they make, minus their cost of goods sold is their gross profit, and then adding in other income components, dividends, interest, or rents that they would get from other investments, gets at a total income piece, and then they would subtract their deductions. You get the cost of doing business, and these deductions are pretty broad. It's a lot of the cost of doing business. Payroll costs, interest, rent that they pay, depreciation expenses that they're allowed to deduct, and then that equals federal taxable income. And then this is the point that Oregon ties to for corporate. And so anything in federal law, anytime the feds change some piece of that, usually it's a deductions piece or perhaps an income component. Most often it's a deductions piece. Then that change would automatically flow through to Oregon under current law, under this rolling reconnect, because we are continually tied. So that's kind of a backdrop of the distinction between our tie with taxable income and all other definitions.
Okay. Questions from the committee about that presentation? And that, and I guess the final piece is that the bill that we have in front of us does what?
The bill that you have in front of you just updates the dates. It does nothing with respect to taxable income because we have that rolling reconnect. Under current law, we're tied to federal law as of December 31st, 2007. There was a version of this bill that was passed in the February session. And so, it has to be a retrospective date. So it was as of December 31st, 2007. This would change that date from 07 to December 31, 08 and incorporate any changes in federal law. And I have spent a fair amount of time going through the bill, federal legislation, to see what might impact Oregon by that way. And there isn't a whole lot. Most of the changes affect Oregon through taxable income. On the revenue impact statement, I did put a slight loss to it. Because, for example, one that I found was that in one of the pieces of legislation that passed in 2008, military combat pay could be included as earned income for the calculation of the federal earned income tax credit. And so if that gets included, the taxpayer would claim a larger earned income tax credit, which would then flow through directly to Oregon because ours is 6% of that credit. So there is a slight loss to that. There is a slight revenue loss on the bill, just a minimal revenue loss impact.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Broom.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to ask Chris how much, I realize we're looking at 2008 federal tax change laws. I assume that you've given some look to the federal stimulus package that's gone over to the Senate now and seen some of the parts. Of course, it's subject to change, perhaps major change. How much of that affects this bill? How much of that affects the reconnect in 2008? And I guess the question is, how much of that is retroactive? And I don't know the federal bill to be able to, it may be nothing, I don't know, but how much of the proposed federal bill would be retroactive to 2008 and how much 2009? I'm basically asking the question, what of that does this include or exclude?
Representative Broom, there, to my understanding of the federal stimulus, and it changes almost daily, it seems, they would be independent because all of those would, most of those effects would start with tax year 2009 and move forward. And so this would tie just through 2008. So there,
well,
they would be.
I think the answer to the question is that we're tying to the law as the law existed on December 31st. If the federal government changes the law after December 31st, it doesn't affect this bill. Now, have I got that wrong?
That's correct. That's the part about tying to December 31st, 2008. So the federal law as it existed on that date is what we would be tied to. Any changes in federal law that occur after that point wouldn't be affected by this bill.
The way it exists today.
I suppose the feds could always go back and retroactively change something that would affect 2008. I'm not aware of any provisions in the bill that do that.
But I don't think, based on our legislation, and you correct me if I've missed this, but I believe this legislation ties to the federal law as it existed on those days. If that's what happens, a change that occurs in the federal law now
I don't think
isn't going to have an effect on tax year 2000.
On a
tax year ending on December 31st, 2008.
Correct.
Because it's language, the law itself didn't go into effect until after that.
Right.
Okay. Yes, Representative Berger.
Mr. Chair,
I should tell you that in a minute we're going to pass out some amendments that raise some new issues. Right now,
why don't we wait until we get the whole plate?
Right now, we're looking at what the bill actually does as it exists right this minute. But we do have some amendments. We do intend to pass them out in the next couple minutes, and then I'm going to ask Chris to describe what those amendments do. And then we're going to have the hearing because I don't think this many people are here to talk about this, what's in the bill right this minute.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
No.
I will hold questions until I get more information.
Okay.
And Mr. Chair?
Yes.
With the Chair's prerogative, it's completely parenthetical and it'll take 2 seconds. I would like to actually welcome two people that are in the audience.
Please.
They are students from my district. They are Hannah and Catherine. They're sitting right back there
with
my staff. Would you please wave?
Yeah.
This is their first day at the Capitol office. Their first time in a committee. They've been helping me on the office, and their very first experience with the committee is your revenue committee.
Oh, good. Well, we'll consider that under courtesy, and we'll hope that this doesn't distract from their future involvement as citizens, voters, and attenders of the legislative committees. This may get pretty dry this afternoon, ladies. Thank you for coming. I think now would be a good time, unless you have a further explanation on this bill, to distribute the amendment.
I think
you're
that's almost planning going through.
Okay. Does anybody else have questions about the bill as it exists today? The reason I wanted to do it this way is that the new amendments actually raise a different topic, although it fits in the relating clause. It is a slightly different topic than the one we've been. So let's distribute the amendments, and then perhaps Chris can explain the amendments. And we're looking at dash 3 and 4, I think, aren't we? Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. I saw the same thing.
What?
Okay. I've got two expenditure impact reports. I assume you should see
the amendments.
Oh, I see. Sure. There it is.
Okay. It's not.
Whoa.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now I understand your puzzlement a minute ago.
Thank you.
No, they were. They thought we were into the meat of the thing, and we weren't yet. Yeah.
Okay.
Chris, help us understand these two amendments.
Okay, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the meat, as it were, is the Dash 3 amendment. That's the policy change. And what this does is it ends the rolling reconnect as of December 31st, 2008, and it freezes our tie to the definition of federal taxable income to be that in effect on December 31st, 2008. So any changes made after December 31st, 2008 that affect taxable income would not automatically flow through to Oregon. And so in those flow charts, whether we're talking about depreciation or other components of income, if the feds pass some, enact some law that changes those, it does not automatically affect Oregon's revenue stream. And the way that is done, in on the Dash 3, lines 3 through 7, modify Section 21 of the bill, which is the income tax generally. It's one of those general pieces. Lines 8 through 10 of the Dash 3 amendment modify Section 23, and then lines 11 through 13 modify Section 24 of the bill. So what we have there are income tax generally and Section 21, personal income tax generally and Section 23, and then corporate excise tax generally in Section 24. It eliminates that language that says the tax year, I can't put my fingers on it.
In each case, you have an A that says on December 31, the current language 2007, new language 2008, semicolon, and then the language that would be deleted would be or, if related to the definition of taxable income, it's applicable to the tax year of the taxpayer.
Exactly.
That language is all the language that goes away in those instances, I think.
Yes, by removing that, for the most part, by removing that language, that removes the rolling reconnect.
Okay. And you have to do it in several places, and then will you describe the other sections then for us?
The other sections, Section 29 and Section 30, mainly are clarification purposes. Again, they are not in the existing bill because there is no specific date in them, and the bill as was drafted was just updating the date from 2007 to 2008. As you can see in Sections 29 and 30, there is no date in there, but what is contained in there is this language for the tax year of the taxpayer, which is the language that was just deleted. So this is a clarification. It's another piece of a rolling reconnect that is being ended and being tied to December 31st, 2008. And for the most part, to my understanding, this pertains to part year and non-resident returns, where there could be some ambiguity about the notion of federal adjusted gross income because of the way those are calculated, whether or not you're actually talking about the federal piece or the Oregon piece. So it's a clarification of those. They're not, again, they're not in the bill because they don't have a date change. They do need to be in a disconnect from the rolling reconnect because they place in a date.
Okay. All right.
The
Dash 4.
The Dash 4 is something of a technical clarification. It's that Section 28 of the bill that lists the federal laws that were enacted in 2008. There were, I think, two laws that were missed in the original drafting, and so this just inserts those. The two that were missing, and you can see on the dashboard, it's the Economic Stimulus Act of 2008 and the HEROES Earnings Assistance and Relief Tax Act of 2008 get added to that Section 28. And so in the bill on Section 28, on the bottom of page 27, you'll see there are a number of federal laws that are just listed there. It just adds those to this list.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't materially affect the connection. Those are listed there for information purposes.
And then it looks like you have a public law change, a citation change.
A citation change, yes. It the correct public law citation was 110-246 instead of 110-245. for the Food Conservation and Energy Act.
Representative Benz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Chris, could you go back to Section 29 again? I'm having trouble making the amendment. Amendment 2157-3-5 with Section 29. Can you explain that?
It's an insert. 29 becomes 31, and this is new language.
Ah. Yes, that's
is that right? Have I got it right?
That's correct.
Is that right?
That's
thank
correct.
You.
It's new language.
Yeah.
And the reason it's new language is because in Section 20 on the dash 3, the Section 29, the ORS 316.013, and in Section 30 of the dash 3's ORS 317.018 are not amended in the original bill because they don't contain a date. That's why they were not included there. But they do need, if the policy is to end the rolling reconnect, they need to be added to the bill.
So in effect, what you're doing is adding two new sections and bumping Section 29 to Section 31.
Yes.
Okay. Great. Does that answer the question?
Yes, thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Other questions about what Chris has told us right now? All right. So I have three people signed up who'd like to be heard. And I think I'm going to call you all up at the same time, although I think your positions are somewhat different. And I would give the committee a chance to hear from you and ask questions, and that's Paul Sheketoff, Jim Craven, and Andy Miller.
Chuck Sheketoff.
Chuck, did I say it wrong? Chuck Sheketoff.
Paul. I've heard all kinds.
I seem to be doing this a lot. It was my job when we organized to name all the members, and I got three of them wrong. So I may do that again this session, and I apologize to anyone in advance if I get your name wrong. Please, Chuck, your turn first.
Sure. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I'm Chuck Sheketoff, Executive Director of the Oregon Center for Public Policy. I'm here today in support of the bill as well as the two amendments, and in particular the Dash 3 amendments. It's our position that the legislature ought to take back control over its tax code. We did pass Rolling Reconnect in the early 1970s. It caused a problem when we got rid of it. It's one of the only areas of law. The Constitution generally doesn't allow the legislature to delegate lawmaking authority to anybody else except for the definition of taxable income. Made a mistake, but in the 70s, then it was in the late 90s, we went back to it, and then in 2003 it was suspended, but it came back. And so we would recommend you do that. It's a good bill, and that's a good provision to do it. And then I'd just like to add, just in response to Representative Broon's question, I think you will probably want to revisit some of the connection stuff after Congress acts, which is supposed to happen by, or they're shooting to happen by President's Day. For instance, the earned income tax credit is in the House passed version is expanded in a couple ways to help families with three or more children and lower income folks get the maximum credit for a higher amount of income that they have, if you recall how that works. And so by connecting to December 31st on that credit in this bill, if they're going to do that effective for the tax year 2009, so if you want to be able to have when the Department of Revenue writes its tax forms for its 2009 tax year that they're going to publish at the end of this year, you want them to be able to, EIC folks, to be able to take advantage of that credit, you'll need to connect to the law after Congress acts and the President signs it, likely. There'll be a number of issues, but that's the one that we're most concerned about and interested in, is the temporary two-year extension of the expansion of the EIC at the federal level. And some of those will have costs and some won't. So, good bill should pass.
As amended.
Thank you, my counsel.
Yeah. I think you were speaking in favor of the Dash 3, if I understand it correctly. Please. Thank you. Mr. Craven.
Oh,
whatever. I don't care. You can pick the order.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Mr. Sheketoff and I have done this show before. I didn't know it happened the third week of the session, but here we are, nevertheless. I did say last session in front of the Senate Revenue Committee, one of these days you should let us do each other's lines, and I think we'd probably both do a good job. Just a few questions and concerns. Actually, we like 2157 just as it's printed, but it sounds like there's a different plan afoot here. I want to say on behalf of American Electronics Association and some of my business...
Let me interrupt. Yes. My vice chair has just reminded me that you haven't yet stated your name for the record.
Jim Craven representing the American Electronics Association, which is now moving to become the Technology Association of America due to a merger. So it's a little complex at this point. But
no wonder you forgot and I forgot to ask.
That's right.
Please
proceed. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes. Just some general comments on where we're headed on this. Having been participated in Reconnect debates for at least 20 years in front of in this hearing room, you know, we've been down this road before and had these conversations. I think that I do want to say right off the bat that in conversations we've had with legislative leadership this week, we understand that the subtext to this has to do with revenue and has to do with the perception that connecting to whatever may come out in the federal stimulus package, again, which we do not know what it will be yet, and it will be changed substantially from the House version is what I hear. We want to recognize that you all have, and we all have an enormous challenge this session in balancing the state's budget and providing for public services. So just want to say that on the record as we start this long 5 to 6 month slug. We're all in this together, and there's going to be lots of difficult choices we all have to make, and we're going to gain some, give up some, et cetera. We have been, in our association, we were part of the advocates for so-called Rolling Reconnect in 1997. We continue to believe that that's a good policy for the state of Oregon and has served us well. It has served both individual taxpayers as well as business taxpayers in providing certainty about the tax code, particularly the definition of income. It's you'll hear over the years, you've heard the CPA Society talk about how it makes their life infinitely easier. It makes gives people the ability, as soon as federal tax law is changed, to at least count on that, at least presume to count on it unless you do something different, and typically you haven't in the years that policy has been in place, except for a brief hiatus at the close of the 2003 session with a presumptive reconnect in January of 2005. So we did take a time out, but we took a time out because you were leaving the building and weren't sure what Congress might do in 2004, so you did sort of take a little time out. Interesting enough, you did remain connected to the federal definition of depreciation, as far as I recall. So we're going to have in this building a little the flip side of that argument or discussion, I guess, in the next several weeks. People will urge you to disconnect from a depreciation bonus that may appear in the federal bill when all the dust is settled. So it is, I guess, in our minds, it could be viewed as being a little bit premature to take this action in the third week of session when we don't really know what the puts and takes are in the federal bill. And as Mr. Sheketov has pointed out, I believe you will need to revisit, because there will be things in the federal stimulus package that, with if you adopt this bill today with the dash threes and never come back to this issue this session, there will be people hurt, and there will be things, there will probably be some revenue that you'll want out of the federal stimulus package, as well as things like the earned income tax credit. So we'll definitely, this is not the end of the debate on this subject. I think everybody who's following it believes that this will continue. Whether we need to resolve it here today, all knowing that we're going to come back to it, is sort of the choice, I guess, of the committee. I do think one other thing about Rolling Reconnect, even though we are moving to meeting more regularly, at least with these brief February special sessions, we will remain in Oregon a part-time, sometime meeting body. And Congress, which meets all the time, all year round, does make changes. And so continuing to chase Reconnect, if it was your policy this session to just end that policy wholesale, we're going to go back into the position of constantly chasing Congress and chasing changes that Congress may make that in some people's minds are very good for some people and maybe not as good for others. But we have believed in Rolling Reconnect as a good fundamental policy for the state of Oregon. We just wanted to come here today to say that, whatever you decide in the nuances of the federal stimulus package. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Craven. Ms. Miller.
Chair Barnhart, committee members, for the record, I'm Andy Miller, Senior Policy Analyst for Oregon Business Association. Obviously, I have a very brief prepared statement I want read into the record. Thank you for letting me do that. Oregon Business Association advocates for long-term enhancement of Oregon's business environment and quality of life, providing bipartisan statewide business leadership that strives to ensure Oregon's long-term prosperity. Our members include businesses of all sizes and industries throughout the state, from our largest farm to two Fortune 500 companies. OBA takes a neutral position on this bill, understanding the budget in Oregon and the choices you face as elected officials. There are strong sentiments among our members regarding the value of bonus depreciation and being connected to the federal code. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions, comments that, that our witnesses might respond to? Representative Bruin and then Representative Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Craven, can you put any sort of a, this might be premature given we don't know exactly what the stimulus bill is going to look like, but can you put any sort of a dollar figure or an investment figure, either gained or lost, if your clients, if the businesses in your industries that you cover were to lose the accelerated or the amplified depreciation piece?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bruin, I neglected to read all of my notes to the committee. One thing I did want to share with the committee is that we are trolling for that input right now. We did not know until Tuesday this week that this issue would come up so rapidly. We knew it would come up this session. It always comes up, and it did come up briefly in the 2008 special session when the bonus depreciation was part of last year's stimulus package. We have an email out to about 150 CFO tax preparers. We're trying to get, I don't think we'll be able to numerically figure out in anticipation dollars and cents, but we are asking for that feedback just so we know whether how important this is. I've seen some numbers of possible feedback effects of maybe $60, $70 million to Oregon in the next biennium. That seems to me would require a whole lot of investment going on, a whole lot of depreciating going on to have the net revenue impact to the state of Oregon to be that large. But that's not a criticism. Your staff is getting information from the federal congressional staff and trying to factor the impact on Oregon. That's how we do it. So the answer is I don't know, but a number of groups are communicating to our members and asking the question. So as we move on down through the session, we'll have better information to share with you.
Do others of you have comments on that?
We looked at the Joint Committee on Taxation scoring of the House measure, and we compared their first 2 years' cost with the first 2 years' estimate they made of the 2008 measure, and it was a little bit surprising to us. It was 78% of that, what we thought it would be less than that, given what's happened to the economy. So we just, in our paper we released earlier this week, said 78% of what the last one cost us, the 85.8, is $67 million. It's a very rough envelope guess. Legislative revenue, when it finally gets out of Congress into the president, will have a better chance of, and they'll rely on Joint Committee on Taxation and other estimates as well. But that's where how we did our first rough guess of where it was at.
Representative Berger?
Thank you, Mr. Chekatoff. I guess I'm asking you the same question that he just asked Mr. Craven. You're concerned about the EIC, and you mentioned that there could be changes that we would want to reconnect to. So why are you suggesting that we unconnect now?
Because you're not connected on it. You don't do automatic connection on the EIC. The only thing you do automatic connection on, the only thing you're allowed to under the Constitution, is the definition of taxable income. So I think Mr. Craven was actually wrong. You're going to want to come back. If I know you're not a full-time, year-round legislature, but when Congress acts like this in the middle of your session, you're going to want to come back because many things are below the line or below the definition of taxable income, having to do with credits other things below the line. And you're going to want to consider whether or not to grant those tax breaks or tax increases to Oregonians.
Follow up. So why are we doing this today, Mr. Chekatoff? And you aren't probably the one to answer that question, because we got a long, hard road in front of us and a whole bunch of proposed changes which we may or may want to be involved in, and here we are on Friday night work sessioning one of the most important bills of the session, and that really bothers me a lot. So why wouldn't you suggest we wait?
I wouldn't suggest you wait, because I think you need to move quickly to end the rolling reconnect on the definition of taxable income before the president signs a bill that takes away revenue from Oregon, and then let you make a independent decision, just like you're going to go through the credits on the EIC and other ones and decide whether Oregon should forego. We estimate three, and based on the Brookings Institute a study, the EIC changes the House passed would cost us $3 million. You'll have to decide whether to grant that to low and middle income Oregonians. And so, but the issue of rolling reconnect is an issue of you can make simple majority votes, just like you do on the stuff below the line, for the things above the line, for the things above the definition of taxable income. And to be able to do that, you have to end rolling reconnect. So you don't get into the problem that I think, and I see it, and it was, and Mr. Craven was also wrong on what you did in 2003. You extended it through the December 31st, 2005, and it was the 2005 legislature that chose not to extend it again. The state's been burned twice. We don't think we should be burned a third time by having rolling reconnect. And I can recall, frankly, when after the 97 session, when the Kitts Hubbard Tax Policy Group was meeting, and we were meeting in a conference room over at the State Lands Building, and Paul Warner was explaining what the 97 legislature did, and he was going through the major bills, and he said, and we did automatic reconnect. And Richard Munn, former head of Legislative Revenue Office and Department of Revenue, said, what? And Paul sort of looked at him, and Elizabeth Hartchenko said, what do you mean? He goes, we did that in 71, and we got burned. That's crazy to do that. And lo and behold, when you got into the recession in 2001, 2003, it burned you some. I can't remember the specifics, but it makes it harder to disconnect from the definition because of the three-fifths rule. And so it was suspended. It should, you know, when you have a bad law, you get rid of it. You think about you don't pass a statute saying, you know, this type of spousal abuse is illegal, but only for 5 years, and then it becomes legal again. Or you don't, the Ways and Means Committee doesn't get rid of a bad program and defund it and say, but in 5 years it comes back. You just get rid of it. And so rolling reconnect, it was a bad experiment. We've done twice. Albert Einstein said insanity is trying the same thing over and over and expecting a different result. Don't try it a third time.
Yeah, please.
May I make a comment, Mr. Chair?
Yes, please.
I like your history lesson, Mr. Sheketoff, and I appreciate that you've brought up some really significant issues here. I happen to think the Rolling Reconnect is one of the nicest things that Oregon has done for taxpayers, particularly since we are, whether we like it or not, a part of the federal system, and it does a lot for our tax code. And I think that moving away from that is an incredible change, shift in what we do. And you have also brought up another interesting subject, which is the number of votes it takes when you're doing this. Presumably, this vote today is a 31 vote for this disconnect, but some of these reconnection votes will have significant impacts on votes on revenue and might be three-fifths votes in the future. And I wonder if that isn't part of the sort of what we're about here. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Reed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. When I indicated an interest to say something, there were a lot of things that hadn't been said then that have since been said, but I just wanted to highlight one particular thread that seems to be running through the discussion to date. And I guess it could be encapsulated. There was, during the campaign season, one of the questionnaires I recall getting was from the League of Women Voters, which asked about generally reconnection. And in my answer, I talked about the need to have the ability as a state to make choices for ourselves. On the one hand, and on the other hand, the interest in making sure that the process of filing income taxes was relatively easy between the state and federal. And so I think that's part of what we're debating here and discussing. And as we take on really challenging economic environment and a budget whose hole looks bigger and bigger, I'm really taken with the fact that this gives us a chance to make decisions for ourselves. I also wanted to acknowledge some of the comments that I've heard both from committee members and from witnesses that this doesn't prevent us from coming back and connecting to things later when we have a sense of what they all mean. We have a lot of difficult choices in front of us, and I would really just conclude by saying thank you to Mr. Craven for, I heard you correct yourself when you initially said you have choices and changed that to we have choices. I think that is an important point. We're all here to make some really difficult choices and balance these things, and I'm glad you're part of that discussion. Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. Others for this panel? I don't have anyone else signed up to be heard today, but given that the conversation may have stimulated others' interests, I see Mr. Marshall standing up. Please come forward.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, John Marshall, representing Associated Oregon Industries. And I've talked to several of you about this issue, and I guess today I would urge caution. I think one of the things that has been not discussed here has been the spending components of the federal stimulus. And we know that there will be tax cuts as well as spending. And I think there's a hope that some of that federal revenue will come to Oregon to help us with our existing budget situation. As was mentioned, this is 7 years ago, some of you remember the last time we went through a recession. And I think it's safe to say that the circumstance we find ourselves in today pales in comparison to what we went through 7 years ago. And we realize from the business community that this is not a situation where we can say, you all go off and fix it and leave us alone. That this is going to be an issue that I think will reach into the heart of our state and the kind of state we want, that will, to the business community, say this is either going to be a place that you're going to want to locate and grow your business and try to attract talent to, or you're not. So I guess what I'm saying is what was mentioned earlier is we're all in this together. And we know that at some point we're going to get a call and we're going to be asked to come in and we're going to start to craft a solution to the problem. And there are going to be some things in there that some of you are going to suggest or that will be suggested by others we're not going to like. And but I think that we're prepared to have that discussion. And we would feel much better having that discussion if we knew what the whole picture looked like. And that's why I'm suggesting that we have a House version in the U.S. Congress. We know that the rules and the numbers, the political numbers in the Senate are different, and the Senate may come up with a version that looks totally different than what the House did, and that this issue is ultimately going to end up in a conference committee. There's a great deal of pressure brought to bear, and so I would expect within the next week or two, we might have something that's actually on the President's desk. At that point, I think we're going to be better positioned to look at the whole picture and to look at those issues that have a positive impact on Oregon, those that have a negative impact on Oregon, and make decisions at that time. And so that's what I would encourage. I believe that if you adopt the -3 amendments, the message that you're sending is not a good one, frankly. There has been a great deal of discussion in this building about economic stimulus, and your side of the building will begin to debate that issue next week. The whole focus in the press has been measures at the federal level to stimulate the economy. When word gets out of your action today and the way that some will interpret it, it will be that, well, economic stimulus is great, but we're not going to allow Oregon taxpayers on the Oregon tax side to take advantage of it because we need the money more than we need the economic stimulus that might accrue. So I would encourage you to wait until we see the whole picture, and then, as I suggested, we're all going to have to weigh in, roll up our sleeves, and figure out how we get out of this mess. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions for Mr. Marshall. Representative Bentz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Marshall, from the standpoint of all of us concerned about the state, which gives us the maximum flexibility, acting today or waiting?
Well, as was Mr. Chair, Representative Bentz, as was suggested earlier, There's one provision that we're aware of, and in fact, in the last 48 hours, we thought that was going to be the only topic of your discussion, which was the bonus depreciation provisions. That would have a negative impact on Oregon revenue. Mr. Shekatoff suggested another provision that you may want to play around with, dealing with the earned income tax credit. So our suggestion is, how do you know what you're going to have to deal with at some point in the future? Why not look at the whole package and then make a determination then? I guess I'm suggesting, I've always been proud of this process because when decisions are made, they're made at the best, with the best information that you have available. And I would suggest that you're making a decision today without all the best information.
Other questions? Representative Pence?
Well, yes.
Go ahead.
Follow up.
Yeah.
It's a confusing thing to compare, and I don't really want to get the economic stimulus thing on the table just yet. But and I'm a little unclear, and I should ask this question of Chris, of exactly where we are if we do nothing. And perhaps we have to do some sort of a reconnect. Am I correct in that? We, as things stand, we have to do something for 09 to get reconnected one way or the other?
Correct. The federal stimulus will have likely have pieces that affect taxable income and those that affect the other definitions. A good example is the earned income credit. And changes to bonus depreciation would flow through automatically because of a rolling reconnect to taxable income. But without additional action, if a change were made to the EIC, then state would have to make affirmative action to tie to those changes.
Well, I guess what I'm saying is we have before us a bill to reconnect before the amendments.
Correct.
If we don't adopt this, where are we?
We are still tied to federal law as of December 31st, 2007.
Right.
For all of those non-taxable income pieces.
So what is the purpose of this then, before the amendment?
To update through 2008. There are some minor changes that occurred in 2008 that we would be tying to. And one of the pieces, there is an earned income piece that would have a very small impact, that kind of thing.
Basically nothing. Okay, so now I can ask the question. So do you think by our changing today and adopting the amendment, that allows us to make decisions more freely, or if we wait tied and allow the federal law to pass, and thus we now enjoy whatever it is the federal folks have decided to do, that makes it easier to make decisions? Which is it?
I'm still thinking about the difference between 07-08 and the dash three amendment. Again, Mr. Chair, Representative Benz, it would seem to me, it would seem to us, that it would make much more sense to look at the entire federal package once it's ultimately completed, and to weigh the costs on one side, the benefits on the other, the gains that come to the state from the spending provisions of that measure, the gains or losses that come from the tax provisions of that measure, and look at it in total and make decisions relative to each of those components and which ones you want to connect with and which ones you don't. So there's nothing, as was suggested, if you pass this, you're going to come back to it. Well, why go through that exercise and just wait and see what the feds come up with and then to make those decisions?
Well, one final follow-up.
Please, go ahead.
I'm trying to figure out which is the best for the state, which gives us the best foundation to deal from. Is it that we will be looking at the federal situation saying, well, we don't have to go along with them because we adopted the amendment today, or we don't adopt the amendment today, we now have the federal situation, and we then say, gosh, we don't like it, so we get together and vote to disconnect as to that item. That seems to be the choice. So I'm trying to figure out if one benefits the state more than the other. That's my question.
Well, I think you're looking for an unbiased opinion, and I regret I don't have one. But
an excellent answer.
But the opinion that I personally believe in, and the opinion that that my employer believes in, is that the rolling reconnect has been a good idea, and that it would be best to wait until you see the entire picture and then make decisions based on the entire picture rather than acting precipitously and without all the facts in front of you.
Thank you. No? Okay. Representative Berger.
Yeah, for the benefit, if you'll indulge me, Mr. Chair, of those who have not sat on the Revenue Committee in the past, the usual process, and I've served three terms, this is my fourth, for this particular issue because it is so complex, is that the wonderful people, the CPA group comes in. Well into the session after the feds have done a whole bunch of changes that are going to affect us, and gives us about 2 days of very detailed picture of what the feds have done on each line and how it affects us. And we can then make good judgments based on known facts. And this then comes late in the session when we're in the process of finalizing in our budget. We know what our revenue picture is, and we have a real clear picture of what the federal legislation is before us. Mr. Sheketoff, bless his heart, just sat there and blew at me all these things that are coming federally that I'm so glad he's aware of. I am not. I'm not that knowledgeable on what's before us and federally. Plus, I'm not very knowledgeable on how it's going to affect Oregon. And that, shame on me, but that's what this process is about, to teach me that so that I can make intelligent policy decisions. What I'm very disturbed with this afternoon is the fact that that's all blown away and we are making a precipitous decision before we have a clue what's coming before us federally. If we do nothing today, we will have to go through that process later, and we will go through that process with a knowledge base on each one of these things. What we're going to do today is disconnect precipitously and then decide later something based on I don't know what. So I am very uncomfortable with 2 weeks, is it 3 weeks into this session, bringing one of the most important functions of this committee forward on a Friday afternoon at 3 o'clock when I'm exhausted and don't have a clue what's coming at us for the Fed. So I would urge caution to this committee in a big way. As far as this kind of important disconnect coming forward now, I'm not very happy, Mr. Chair, and that's about the longest speech I've ever given in this committee.
Thank you, Representative Berger. Thank you, Mr. Marshall. We appreciate your testimony. Let me just respond briefly to the implied question that I think is contained in your speech. I do expect that we will have exactly that presentation that you were describing later on in the session. One of the things that I did on Tuesday when I knew this issue was going to be coming up today was I instructed our staff to prepare an additional bill on relating to connection to federal tax law so that because we were still in a position where we could ask for drafts for bills. The object of that is to have exactly the conversation that you were describing with the CPA community when they are ready with their presentation. There's no intention at all to short-circuit or obviate that conversation or that analysis that we might have fairly late in the session. An additional comment that I would have is that there's no way for us at this moment to predict what the federal government is going to do. We know, for example, that in 2003, Lane Shetterly's committee and the legislature adopted a disconnect bill because they were terribly frightened that the federal government was going to remove from the definition of income the receipt of dividends. If they had done that, then that would, of course, had a huge impact on the definition of income for the state of Oregon. They were frightened that was going to happen. It looked like it was going to happen, so they disconnected from everything except depreciation. What actually happened, of course, at the federal level was that there was a compromise at the federal level, and the bill that was actually approved by Congress led to a change in the depreciation law, the only one that they didn't disconnect from. So his attempt, Representative Shetterly's attempt, and the legislature's attempt to head off what could have been a very large hit, precisely at a time when we didn't have the money to accept a hit, turned out not to work, because that one narrow spot that they stayed connected turned out to be the one that the Congress chose to use. One of the reasons for the proposal, for the Dash 3 amendment proposal, is so that we don't have to guess what they're going to do. We don't have to wonder what they're going to do. We can disconnect now, and then it becomes within our power toward the end of the session to take whatever particular pieces of their action that we think will benefit Oregon and our budget and Oregon's taxpayers and the stimulus that we need for the economy, all of those issues, and wrap them in together and adopt an additional bill after we've heard precisely the report you described, the report from the accountants, which I agree is a very important document and very helpful for us as we do our work. What this bill does with the amendment is that it allows the legislature to put a timeout on what Congress can do to us and puts us in control of our own budget. We are going to have, I think everyone in this room knows, that we are going to have an extremely difficult budget year. We're looking right now at the potential equivalent of a $6 billion cut, of a $6 billion cut in this year's budget, given how much we have to cut. If it were a biennial budget, that would be the magnitude of the cut that we're facing for this year. For the next 2 years' budget, we're facing a cut that might be in the neighborhood of $3 billion. We don't know the details of all this yet, and these numbers might be a little bit large. What I'm afraid is they might be a little bit small, too. So what we're part of the purpose of this particular amendment is to clear the decks so that we don't have to worry about the effect of what the feds might do to us while we are trying to struggle with a very, very difficult budget situation. Now, of course, each member of the committee makes his or her own choice about whether that's an appropriate decision or not, but I wanted to give you a little bit of the background about why it is that it's coming up at this time. Representative Broom.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate that discussion, and I would just, for the record, I would like to know if there's anything that structurally prohibits or changes the way we would disconnect by doing it today, as we're proposing, or doing it 2 or 3 weeks from now, once we have the information that you're talking about. What is there any structural difference or change to how this committee or this House body would go about getting this done today versus, you know, let's assume 3 weeks from now?
Well, the difference between now and 3 weeks from now is that we still won't have the information that we need 3 weeks from now. The reality is that Congress is going to be in session for the rest of the year. I think anyone who believes that the current action that Congress is engaged in is the last thing they're going to do on this topic for this year probably should not make any bets on that, because they'll probably lose the bet. I would suspect that Congress is going to be in action around issues that involve these kinds of topics at least the rest of this year, probably well into next year. We will be out of here at the end of June. So the difference between now and 3 weeks from now, I think, is very modest in terms of the information that we'll have available.
May I follow with that, Mr. Chair?
Sure, please.
Thank you, Mr. I appreciate that. I guess my question, I appreciate that discussion and don't disagree with the analysis. I'm still looking at the answer. What I think my question is there any structural difference between what we're doing today and just to make an assumption? Yes, they're going to be working on tax law and revenue law this entire year at the federal level. But the stimulus package that they're working on right now that was voted out of the House this week, it's now sitting in the Senate, we think that that's coming within 2 or 3 weeks. If it takes months and months and months, that's a different analysis. But most people, most pundits, suggest that that will be on the president's desk, as it was said, within 2 or 3 weeks. Is there anything structurally different for this body, for this revenue body and for the House body, mm-hmm. by waiting those 3 weeks?
I think that Representative...
Is there any...
Riley?
Do we have any staff that can answer that question for us? Paul?
I don't think they have an answer, but if Paul wants to attempt one.
Sorry,
I don't want to put you on the spot.
Sorry, Paul.
I should say structurally or procedurally different.
Mm-hmm.
Chair Paul Warner, Legislative Revenue Office. I understand the question is in terms of the structure of how we make revenue decisions in the legislature and whether if there's a change in federal law or changing in the rolling and reconnect, whether that might affect the requirements of making a decision. Is that where you're going?
Yeah, that's
going?
Exactly. Thank you. Being so eloquent.
As we look at the stimulus bill now, with as the House version, which does have the bonus depreciation piece in it, and has some other piece. For example, there's an exclusion of $2,400 of unemployment compensation. Those components would have a net negative revenue impact on us through the Rolling Reconnect. So, if those were to become law, and then you were to disconnect, and those were current law, then the effect would be to raise revenue. If you disconnect prior to that, the effect would not be a general revenue raising. So that's our understanding of how current law would change. If through the Rolling Reconnect, what current law, what becomes current law to us is what is current law to the federal system. So the difference would be the vote requirements on making a decision, whether it's a 3/5 vote or a simple majority vote.
Perfect. So can I follow, Mr. Chair,
thank
just
you,
to make
please,
sure that's clearly on record. So if we do it today with the -3 amendment and it were to pass out of this revenue committee, it would take 31 votes on the House floor to get it done. If we wait till after the stimulus package is assumingly approved, comes out of this committee with the -3 amendment, it would take 36 votes.
That's correct. If you make the decision after that federal law changes and our revenue impact shows that it would, by making the decision at that time, would generate positive revenue for the state, then it would require a 3. That's my understanding and discussion with council.
Thank you for the clarification, Mr. Thank you.
I didn't realize that's the point you were getting at, because that's a pretty simple point. Thank you. Representative Benz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Warner, I had another question for you, if you didn't mind, before you tried to get away.
Dr. Warner. I think that was Friday afternoon.
Dr. Warner. I misspoke, Dr. Warner. Am I correct in understanding that one of the values of the current arrangement, is that we have a choice when a change is made at the federal level, it's automatically incorporated into Oregon law. And therefore, we as a legislature would look at it and say, oh, there it is. And we could either say, well, that's great, let's leave it that way, or we could move to change it. And this means that if we like what has been done at the federal level, then we don't have to act. And thus, the fact that we are connected has that value. Is that a value?
Representative Benz, I guess, first of all, I would say that, you know, no matter what you do and no matter how you do, develop your connect policy, whether it's a single point in time or rolling reconnect, it's still ultimately always your policy responsibility to make those decisions. And that, you know, council is very clear that that's your constitutional responsibility. So it becomes an issue of what are the costs and benefits of going to the rolling reconnect, which make these adjustments to the change in the federal tax base without you being in session, without you having to make the decision and have to make an affirmative decision to disconnect after the fact. Which of those is least disruptive in terms of tax policy? Well, you know, I think that the short answer is that so many decisions that you have to make in this committee, there's definite trade-offs to make. There are clear advantages to having a federal structure that we tie to. It makes compliance easier. It makes it easier for taxpayers. It's more consistent. On the other hand, when you're dealing with revenue policy decisions, particularly over the course of the business cycle, there are revenue impacts from those automatic connections that may be very distorting for your budget. And, of course, the federal government, you know, and the federal government, I would say, and their list of priorities, the impact on state budgets is pretty low. They're looking at trying to manage the business cycle, trying to stabilize over a long period of time. The dollar amounts of a deficit in a given year is not a factor for them. I mean, that's they expect to run deficits during recessions, whereas you don't have that luxury. You've got to balance to a two-year period, and that's the trade-off. That's where it gets complicated for you. So you weigh the benefits of tax administration, compliance, consistency with those budget consequences of some of those connections, and that's what you're confronted with now. And frankly, we were confronted with this in 2003 and again during the February session.
Yes, please, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is becoming a bit more clear in my mind, and it seems that the choice is we go back to 2008 and just operate. If we adopt the amendment, we go back to 2008, and the law of 2008 applies.
Yes.
And if we don't adopt the amendment, then we float along with the federal government with the reconnect. Now, it seems to me that in the past there was a policy decision made that there were sufficient benefits to be connected, and thus we were and have been connected for a series of years. Am I correct in looking back at what you just told us, that one of the primary benefits is to the CPA element of our society and the folks that spend all the time trying to sort through this, and this gives them a firm foundation to work from, that is, the connection to the federal statute. And thus, our debates then start out with that. And our debate of whether to disconnect, was that the main driving policy of being connected, that we were trying to help the CPAs, or was there something more more grand about it?
I won't speak for the CPAs, but they are, of course, very close to the compliance issue and the administrative costs issue. So, and they have traditionally advocated for a system that reduces complexity and therefore encourages compliance. But you know that is an important piece to it. The other issue would be in terms of how do different elements of the federal system affect the state, and so that if you have a consistent set of policies in terms of the business cost component, for example, that Chris went through, there's advantages to having consistency in terms of those investment decisions. So, you know, those are some of the things that are looked at. I think you've heard testimony on that. But in terms of kind of the history of where the state has gone, the initial going back to my history of it back in the early 80s, the disconnect from a rolling reconnect provision was taken because of an accelerated depreciation schedule that was at the federal level to fight the 81-82 recession. And, of course, at that time, the budget crisis was very severe in the state, and the decision was made to go to a connection at a point in time. That policy stayed in place until 97. Now, keep in mind that when you're connected to a point in time, you can be faced with even the same, back to Representative Bruin's question about how it may affect your voting requirements. Well, you may easily get a series of federal changes. For example, in 86, some federal changes that broadened the base significantly. At that time, there wasn't a three-fifths vote requirement, but it did raise revenue significantly for the state to reconnect to those federal changes. And maybe I'm an optimist, but I do suspect at some point the feds will deal with the deficit in the long term, and they'll have to begin to look at some of those potential base broadening issues. And well, you'll be looking at a reconnect bill that could well be revenue raising. So, and indeed that was the case in the early 90s. So you had that period, and in 97 the decision was made that to go to the rolling reconnect, the advantages of administration, the advantage of having consistency in how business costs are treated, was sufficient to outweigh some of the costs, some of the budgetary problems that you run into through that connection. Now, of course, as some of the testimony you had today, that was prior to the 2001-2002 recession, and now the recession we have in 2008. So you're back with this cyclical issue. It's much more prominent now than perhaps it was in 97.
Thank you, Dr. Horner.
Thank you, Representative Bailey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There's been a lot of complex discussion here, so I want to make sure that I'm clear on a couple of things. If in the federal stimulus package there happens to be a change in taxable income that would have the effect of creating a reduction in tax burden for a particular class of taxpayers, and Oregon was to disconnect the rolling reconnect, would that class of taxpayers still be able to enjoy the federal tax benefits of the stimulus package?
Vice Chair Bailey, Mr. Chair, yes. I mean, that's going to affect their federal tax payment. You do have some feedback effects through deductibility of the amount of taxes that, for example, your federal taxes go down, you have less federal taxes to subtract on your state return. And that's what we call indirect effects, and that really will happen regardless of your connection point. I mean, that's because that's a federal decision how much are going to be taxed, and as long as we keep the same subtraction policy, that won't influence things. But absolutely, the key difference to keep in mind is that you're looking at the federal level for most individuals, certainly high-income individuals and corporations, tax rates that are considerably higher than the Oregon tax rates.
Mm-hmm.
So federal tax policy has a lot bigger effect on behavior than the state policy in terms of overall behavior, maybe not in terms of regional location, but in terms of overall behavior.
Yes, please, go ahead.
Thank you. And you anticipated my next question. I'm curious for some examples of the magnitude of that difference in effect. So, for example, we heard Mr. Marshall mention specifically the bonus depreciation provision. Can you give us a magnitude sense of the federal tax benefit there versus the Oregon tax benefit if the reconnect were to occur?
Vice Chair Bailey, the simplest comparison is in tax rates. And our corporate tax rate is 6.6%, and the federal rate is 35%. So that's a difference in magnitude of 35% versus 6.6%. So the federal impacts are considerably greater. Another difference to keep in mind is when you look at kind of this interaction is that we've had a lot of discussion about deductibility of individual of federal taxes on your state returns, and of course we limit that. But for corporations, there's no deductibility. They can't deduct their federal taxes. But they can deduct their state taxes on their federal return.
Okay. Please, go ahead.
Yeah. Thank you. And is it also correct to say that because these businesses, in this particular example, would enjoy this 35% tax rate, the cut there, that the additional cut in the 6.6% tax rate would have a declining marginal value on top of that 35%?
Vice Chair Bailey, it's safe to say that it certainly have a smaller impact on overall investment decisions than the federal impact with a much larger tax rate. Yes.
Final follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Please, yeah.
So if the federal stimulus package is by definition a stimulus package and it is intended to spur investment, would it be correct to say that the bulk of the investment intended by the federal stimulus package would occur and that the state, if disconnected, would have an opportunity to make a decision about the dollars for the 6.6%, whether or not the stimulative effect of that additional 6.6% would best be used there or on another avenue?
Well, if I understand, Vice Chair Bailey, I think what you're saying is yes, the bulk of the effect will, in terms of the, to the extent that, that the accelerated depreciation speeds up this investment, encourages it to take place in the current tax year, the impact of the federal is going to be a lot greater than the state. And the state's impact, maybe at the margin you would see some impact, but it would be small relative to the federal. And would that have a bigger impact, for example, than other kind of stimulus measures? Hard to say in terms of the tax side. We do think that in the short term, it's standard macroeconomic theory that you're going to get a bigger short-term effect on a spending change than you do on a tax change because of the saving component. But over the long term, that's hard to say. That depends on a lot of factors and depends on the overall environment, particularly at the regional level, and how that might affect our competitiveness.
Thank you, Mr. Warner. I know it's difficult to discuss hypotheticals.
Thank you, Representative Berger.
Yeah, if you'll indulge me, Mr. Chair, I'm appalled that my mention of the CPAs might have led Representative Benz to conclude that we have the connection because of the CPAs or for their convenience. And I have to put on the record, Ms., for Representative Benz, that the CPAs come in here and give us a thorough vetting on these changes. As a public service and to save our staff from doing an incredible amount of research and detailed analysis, and it is a great benefit to us, and it has nothing to do with whether we connect or not. It is a service that they provide to this committee that is greatly appreciated.
Thank you. Representative Benz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Obviously, I need to work on my question asking abilities to the level of consent to my esteemed colleague. I was hoping that I would hear that there was more to the rolling reconnect or the original idea to link to federal law than merely to make life easier for CPAs. And it strikes me a couple of things. First, we heard from some of the previous witnesses that this signal that might be sent if we were to disconnect would be negative to business. And so the question I'm going to ask is really one of opinion and not of, maybe all economics is opinion anyway, but let me just ask.
Some of us who want to stay on good terms with the staff don't believe that.
Well, I did say maybe.
Yes, maybe. Yes, you did.
The question is this. We by adopting a disconnect today, would send some signal to business that in anticipation, shall we say, of a increase in the 179 deduction, we wanted to head that off. There's the signal. Or in the alternative, we could choose to reconnect, then let the federal government pass an increased 179 deduction. And at that point, we could, taking 36 votes, step up and bite the bullet and say, no, you businesses in Oregon can't have that. Which do you think sends the more difficult or a signal to business?
Vice Chair Benz, I'll let business talk about in terms of what their how their reaction is and not try to assume it for them. But, I will say, I think clearly, and this was stated in the testimony before, the business community recognizes that this cycle, not only is it severe, but it really is beyond something we've experienced for quite some time. So I think there's a clear recognition that the economic environment has changed dramatically. And if you look back historically when that has happened, state governments are under enormous fiscal pressure. You have to balance your budget, so in the short term, and you have to make some decisions that you wouldn't make otherwise in order to do that. So I think everybody recognizes that. You don't have any good choices right now, particularly with a short period of time you're looking at for this biennium, but as you go into 2009-11 as well, there aren't any easy choices. Whatever you do in the short run is going to have negative consequences, whether you cut the budget or whether you raise revenue or whether you don't follow through, add some additional stimulus to a federal policy. Any of those things will have some short-term negative consequences. I think the role of the revenue committee is to think about that tax policy long-term, what's the best strategy in terms of tax policy to accomplish the budgetary needs you see long-term, to position Oregon in terms of competitiveness, in terms of developing and attracting labor and developing an attractive capital. So, you know, those things are general answers, but I think that's where the focus has to be at the state level, because you just, there's not a lot of real positive things you can do in a fiscal situation like this. So it's managing it and looking to the longer term to try to develop policies that'll help the state and try to minimize the damage in the short term.
Yes, go ahead.
And thank you very much, Mr. Chair. That is exactly the question we're trying to answer in this debate this afternoon.
Yes.
Which is better for the state of Oregon? That is the question. And I'm struck that maybe it doesn't matter which we do. But that's my question to you. Does it matter? Would it be better that we adopt this afternoon or better to put it off and wait and see what the federal government does? Which is better?
Well, Vice Chair Benz, I really think that's a policy issue for you to determine. I mean, as staff, I don't think I can give you a direct answer on that. I can help you weigh through some of the trade-offs and some of the costs and benefits of making that decision, but as they say, that's why you're paid the big bucks. I'm down here.
And for those on the internet, that is a joke.
Yeah, right.
That's right.
Thank you, Dr. Warner. That's a good answer.
Thank you. That's very helpful. May I simply add to that point? Some of us have to go because of 3 o'clock meetings. I should announce now, for those who are now late for their 3 o'clock committee meetings, that it is my intention to work this bill on Monday. We have it on the agenda for a public hearing and work session on Monday. I expect the public hearing to be pretty short. But we do expect to work it on Monday. So those who have to go for meetings, please do. For others who can stay, please do that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Bruhn. Appreciate it. One quick comment and then ask for your response, Paul, if you want to make one. As we look at that issue, what's going to be best for Oregon, and that list of things you gave us, the stimulation of the economy, the kind of basis for the operation of an economy and the well-being of Oregonians, some of those are revenue decisions, some of those are budgetary decisions, and some of those involve other kinds of policies, don't they?
Absolutely.
Right. Thank you.
Yes, and I think, Mr. Chair, when you look at this longer-term issue, I think the thing that's very difficult about this situation is we know there's a cyclical component here. But we also know there's something longer term happening, and that I think will require us to reevaluate overall fiscal policy. And that's something I think that the committee will need to start thinking about, and I think the entire country is starting to think about.
That was something that I missed in the answer you gave to Representative Benz. Could you say a little more about that issue, this change in the long term? I don't expect a dissertation today, but just a few sentences.
Mr. Chair, I think that all economists are kind of rethinking what their long-term assumptions are. You had the state economists come in and talk to you about our forecast service has a lot lower growth, not only now, but it'll put us at a lower level in 2015. So that means that the level of economic activity that we see 10 years from now is probably going to be quite a bit less than we were thinking just a couple of years ago. And so that means a rethink in terms of the kind of environment we're going to be in. Now, personally, I don't think Oregon's relative position has changed much with this, but I think the overall national and perhaps international environment, I think, looks a lot different than at least I thought it did even just a year ago. And that has definite implications for long-term fiscal policy for all the states and for the federal government.
Fiscal, budgetary policy, and policy and probably in other areas as well.
Yes, and revenue policy, yes.
Yes. Thank you. Committee, other discussion in public hearing today? We will have an opportunity to revisit on Monday, and I expect some motions on Monday in work session, and we'll decide where we're going. Thank you very much. Anything else today? I appreciate members sticking around on a Friday afternoon to have this important conversation. And I think I'm ready to adjourn. Yes? Yes, I am. The committee, we will close the public hearing on House Bill 2157.
Yes.
And we are adjourned until Monday.
Be safe. Stay upright. You'll be fine.